Hello and good evening, everybody. Thank you all for joining us for the 26th episode of Podcast Reculture. Joining me tonight are Mihir Jam.
Hey guys, how's it going?
And our Fateh Ali Khan. Who's giving us a silent treatment? Well, then F him. Okay, Mihir, how are your exams going, man?
Let's. Going fine. Tomorrow's the last paper.
Which is?
Computer science.
Are you prepared for it?
Oh yeah, that's why I'm doing this podcast.
But of course, one of the reasons why we didn't do the podcast yesterday was that, yesterday was because some of us couldn't gather. Well, none of us could gather. And last week's absence was due to some extremely bizarre technical difficulty. Skype just kept on dropping after 18 seconds. I don't know what the hell happened over there. So, yeah.
That was you, man. It was all you.
Yeah, that's our father after his mic mute, unnoticed mic mute. Oh, God, you suck.
At least my Skype connection doesn't drop every 18 seconds, dude.
You should have tried it from your end. Maybe it was, I thought it was, anyways, whatever.
And at least I can join 20-player games in Blur. Anyway. What's up?
Okay. We've been gone 2 whole weeks. Not that we've watched a lot. Well, I would hope we've watched quite a bit. Here, why don't you? Since the absence is partly because of you. Was partly because of you. Why don't you start with? Have you been watching anything interesting?
I mean, my exams are going on for the last 2 weeks, so I haven't been watching much actually. But I did watch a couple of movies. Which I would
Movies. Okay.
Yeah. So suddenly I had this surge of watching Korean cinema again, and I revisited.
What?
And I revisited.
Host.
Bong Joon-ho's host, the host.
An old boy.
And Park Chan-wook's old boy. Yes.
Nice, dude. Awesome. Wow. Okay.
So,
sorry.
these two movies are basically
fucking
coined,
awesome.
Yeah, they're coined as the epitome of Korean cinema or Korean filmmaking. So I'll start with the host. Now the host is you can like generalize it by the fact that it's a monster movie, and it basically follows or it starts off with this American scientist, not a scientist but like a person in the American military who's doing some experiments, and he has his Korean assistant, and they basically after the experiments are done, they need to drain this the chemicals they've been using, which are highly toxic.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the tedious work, the American representative says that to the Korean, just drain it down the
drain.
Yeah, or the drain. And but he questioned him, like, why would I do that? Because that leads directly to the Han River. Anyway, after much persuasion, he ends up doing it, and that's where the movie starts.
Much persuasion. The American dude just looked at him in the eye, and he was like,
yeah,
okay.
He got scared. Anyway, so it starts off, the credit sequence is just him draining the toxins down the drain, and I guess, what was it, 10 years later, or was it 5 years later? Anyway, after 10 years...
It was just... No. Dude, it was... They didn't specify the time. Did they, Arfi?
They did. I remember.
Don't remember.
Yeah, okay, they did. They specified a time. I'm not sure exactly when, like, or how much time, but it was like I think 5 to 6 years, and this.
Wait, I have the movie on me. I'll just check it out. Anyways, yeah, go ahead.
This creature seems to have how do you say evolved into this mutant.
What creature though? I mean, the whole illusion is that it's some sort of fish that has been mutated into.
But we don't know that also,
it doesn't look like a fish. I mean, it's a mixture of some shit.
It's not like Godzilla or anything. It's like 50 to 20 feet long, and basically I like the fact that it's called the host rather than some monster, and so basically it starts off there. And this movie doesn't have any build up or anything. It doesn't have the patience for that. It just immediately bounces into the monster attack.
Shit just happening.
Yeah. And the monster begins to get basically gets aggressive because of the fact that the people of who are next to the Han River agitated by throwing food at it, and
like, oh, look at that big ass thing in the water, let's throw fish at it.
And 15 minutes in the movie, the the monster or the host is basically just rampaging to like around the shore and basically destroying anything that's in its path. And that's where the film starts. It is amazing. That sequence is one of the best sequences in monster film history. It is such an intense scene. It's such
and the music.
And the music.
Yeah, because the music is really, it starts with nothing and then slowly there's like this violin buildup or something. And then you're like, whoa, there's some weird shit going on. And then the music goes all like psychotic crazy and then, oh.
Yeah, it is excellently directed. You know where the hell is the, you know like where the monster is, you know where the people are, you know the whole geography of the situation, and it's so well directed. I mean, that's just a testament to Bong Joon-ho's direction. It is an amazing sequence.
But it's not just about the monster itself.
Yeah, everything, like the human emotions that they've portrayed, like the.
Because I mean, the story follows like this family where grandfather, his like dumbass son.
I'm getting
he's
into
pretty
that.
Much the dumb. Okay.
Anyway, so yeah, as Taimur said, it basically follows this family.
Spoilers.
Of four, and what happens is that there's this his son, who has a daughter called I think Hyun Seo. And she basically gets eaten, like quote unquote. By
well, they show it as she's basically been dragged down. Yeah.
And basically the whole premise of the film is that this family is trying to get their daughter back because they get a call later from her, and that's where the film starts. It's basically this family trying to get the daughter back from where the host is dumping all its bodies. And that's all I'll say. So this movie was made in 2006. And
so I don't think there's any need for spoiler tags over here. 2006?
Yeah. I'm not going to spoil
it. Holy shit, that's old.
Yeah, and the CGI and like the animatronics still hold up to today. Except for like...
Dude,
like,
hell yes.
A last scene, which the way...
Yeah, I guess.
Scene, which was kind of like shitty. But other than that, everything else was really... Like it was tangible, it was believable. So that's all you need from this type of movie. And this movie is just not, you know, like just completely scary. It's scary. It's funny. It's like emotional at times when it has to be. It's a blast. It is seriously one of the best. Actually, it is my favorite like monster movie ever created. It is an excellent film.
Yes. I just a small caveat on the timeline. The movie starts in February 2009. So the movie is released in 2006. So they're basically playing sort of that. So 6 years.
I mean, also what I liked about it is there's a lot of social commentary and political commentary the back of the movie without it being too overt and, you know, preachy and things like that. Yeah, it all worked really well. Yeah.
This movie, I saw it, I think, I'm not really sure whether I saw it before or after that the thing came out. What's it called? The J.J. Abrams movie, the monster movie. Cloverfield, yeah. Now, these are, I think in the Western release for The Host actually was somewhere around the same time as Cloverfield came out back in early 2008 was Cloverfield. Right? Yeah, I'm telling you, man, because the Western cinemas, because I remember I watched some other movie at the end of 2007 and the posters were up for The Host, in the cinemas over here.
Yeah, I saw that as well.
But man, I must say that on first impression, the first time you see Cloverfield, it is like I really loved it. But on second viewing and subsequent viewings, the impact obviously it sort of dies down. But in the host, it just keeps on, you know, it just maintains that level of quality or the suspense. You know what's going to happen, but I mean, it's all up to the direction.
I completely, and I got to say, like I have to commend one guy, the main actor. I think his name is Song Kang. So I'm not sure actually.
You can continue. Yeah.
He's basically in like 95% of the Korean movies I've ever watched, and that's like a.
That's because you're watching good Korean movies.
Yeah, but he's basically in every one of them, and that's just like a testament to his ability, to his acting ability, and to his.
Yeah, Kang Ho Song.
Yeah, he is one powerhouse of talent. It is amazing just to watch him on screen because
he is so versatile in his.
I've seen like so many movies of his, and every role is different. Every role has something new to offer. It's quite amazing, like how he pulls it off. And highly recommended The Host. Check it out if you can. I think it's fairly easy to find right now.
He was also in Lady Vengeance,
Sympathy of Mr. Vengeance. He was there.
Oh, yes, of course.
Memories
oh, my
of
God.
Murder, the other Bong Joon-ho movie. He was there in yep. Joint Security Area. A lot of movies, and they are all really, really good movies. Anyway, moving on, the second Korean movie I watched is Old Boy.
Oh, man.
Old Boy is a film by Park Chan-wook. Who basically has directed the trilogy, Revenge trilogy.
Yeah.
He has directed, I think, there's a movie called Thirst, which came out last year, about a vampire. Anyway, this movie is a masterpiece, number one. It basically follows, it starts off with this character whose name is Oh Dae-soo, and he's basically making a fool of himself in a police department. He was basically arrested for some reasons unknown to us. Anyway, his friend is basically talking to the officials, and he's trying to get him out. And he's making a fool out of himself over there. When he gets out, he immediately goes to a telephone booth, and he calls his family. And while he's talking to his daughter, and he asks for his mother, his friend takes the phone and basically starts talking to the daughter as well. And in that moment, Oh Dae-soo basically just disappears. And he's basically, I guess, prisoned in this hotel kind of a room. And he's there for 15 years. And the movie then begins with the fact that for these 15 years, he doesn't know why he's imprisoned. So he basically trains himself. He's trying to understand. His only connection to the real world is this TV he gets. And the food he gets, that's it. He has nothing else. There are no windows. There's nothing. It's just a hotel room which is empty. And are you guys there?
Yeah.
Okay. You're listening intently.
Yes, yeah. It's anyway, something special.
So the movie, after 15 years, he suddenly let out, even though he actually had basically planned how to get out through by breaking like brick by brick going through the wall, which is a testament to Shawshank Redemption. Anyway. Now the movie basically starts off with him in this world, in world 15 years later, and we follow him. He's trying to basically track back what happened to him. Why did who did he like piss off so much that they had to imprison him for 15 years? And that's all I'll say. Now, this movie I think came out in 2000 and I can't remember. I think it's 2002 or 2003. And this movie is Park Chan-wook's best movie. It is his masterpiece. And it is an amazing story of like incest of basically trying to find out who you are.
Whoa, dude! Spoilers.
I just said that.
You basically okay.
Yeah, don't you don't have to spoil it now.
Yeah, anyway, dumbass.
Anyway, it's a great movie. You have like this is one movie that like can easily
see the best reason
in the name classic. Yeah.
The biggest reason why this movie was so well received and so loved by everybody is because. You follow this journey of this man and you're actually discovering things as he's going on. And then the way things slowly, I'm not going to say connected events like, you know, unravel like in, what's his name, Quentin Tarantino movies. It's just that, you know, you slowly start linking these things together towards the end. And he's still like in this very confused and angry state as to, you know, who the hell did this. And he's just like going all out over, yeah. I mean, there's not much violence throughout the movie.
Yeah,
what little there is, it's kick-ass.
Right. The movie is insanely well-directed. Like, there are so many cultural references to Korea and the actor, Oh Dae-soo, I can't remember who played him, but he is perfect for the role.
Min Sik Choi.
Yeah, he is so good. Like, his monologues are so, like, they're so, encapsulating and they are so well-written. The movie is excellent. I mean, you have to see this movie if you want to get into Korean cinema. This is like the masterpiece.
Let's give the people a little bit of an idea of the genre type. It is that, you know, obviously from the story you would have get that this is sort of a thriller drama type film, but it's also a lot about vengeance and stuff like that. It's not like Sympathy for Mr. Can it be considered like Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance?
I mean, Sympathy. I felt Sympathy and Lady were very, you know, like. They weren't as intense. I mean, they were intense in the sense that they were.
Yeah, the only reason this movie was intense because of the revelation towards the end.
Yeah,
no,
let's be honest.
Well, I mean, as it builds up as well, you know, honestly, I find this movie. I love the movie. I absolutely love the movie. But I mean, I guess it's, again, it's a testament to how good and, you know, the emotions it evokes in you. I always find it hard to watch it again because I know the emotions that that movie is going to put me through, and it disturbs me. You know, I was like, oh my God, do I really want to watch this movie? Even though I know it's fantastic. You know, it's
but then you can say the same thing for Lady Vengeance as well, which towards the end it was.
But I felt Lady Vengeance was more like, you know, it was a great film, yeah, but it was more like campy. It was more fun than Old Boy. Old Boy was just it was serious. There was no comic relief in the movie. It was just completely. Like stuff just keeps escalating in the movie, and in Lady Vengeance is just like, you know, it was a fun movie.
Which reminds me, I think this is not Korean. This is probably Hong Kong film. Have you guys seen Itchy the Killer?
Yeah. Oh God, yeah. That's just nasty.
I felt the movie was just like, you know, trying to be gross at the end.
Controversial for the sake of it.
Yeah, it wasn't like Old Boy where you know when he actually does those sick things, you're like. It's integral to the plot, but in Ichi the Killer, it's not. It's just, you know.
Because even from the way it freaking starts, man, that movie.
Do they even? I'm trying to remember. They do show why his captor did the things that he did, right?
In Old Boy.
Yeah, in Old Boy.
Yeah, of course.
Like why?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean that's okay. That's the.
No, I mean, he realized what's happened. Okay, yeah, okay. Fair enough. And I heard that they're going to make a Hollywood remake of starring...
This was in 2008. The people, I think Spielberg was talking about remaking it, and Will Smith to direct it. But I was just completely against
it. Will Smith to direct it. Will Smith to star in it.
Yeah, Spielberg to direct it, and Will Smith to... But I was completely against, because Old Boy, what makes Old Boy so magical is that these monologues are so well constructed with all the cultural references. You can't do that. You can't, like I'm just going to say the squid sequence. You cannot recreate that in American cinema. You know, it's not possible. Like these movies come only once, and they are so well, they're so amazingly made that they hold their ground. And Old Boy isn't even that old. It's just like what, 7 to 8 years old. I don't understand why you have to remake it. And I've heard that they're remaking.
They remade The Ring what 5 years after the Japanese version, and Old Boy still 2003. So
yeah, but I don't know. The Ring, I felt you could remake it because, you know, it's that story. But in Old Boy,
of course, it's the story as well in Old Boy.
But not as much, because Old Boy, it's the direction and the acting that powerhouses the movie.
But yeah, that's what I'm saying. That if let's forget the fact. I don't know. Will Smith is. He's proven himself to be quite a versatile actor.
He's a great. Do you actually think he can pull off what this guy did in Old Boy? I don't think so,
dude. After seeing that film, what's it called? Arfi, maybe you can help me out. That Will Smith film where his son also starred in the movie. It was like an emotional.
Pursuit of Happiness.
Yeah. Okay. After watching something like that,
Pursuit of Happiness is like a drama kind of family. This is just.
Yeah. I know what you're trying to say, but the fact is that, you know, there's a lot of intense emotion going on, and I think that Will Smith can pull that sort of.
I completely disagree. I have.
Okay, but let's disregard Will Smith. Let's disregard Will Smith. You think that Spielberg can't replicate?
Because this is America. This is the Korean references are not. They will not work in American cinema. Okay, that's number one. That is the main thing that won't work.
Yeah, but you don't need Korean references to make Old Boy what it was.
But that's what those little subtle, like, you know, differences make it so magical. Those subtle, like, inputs of the director make it such a great movie. And we've seen this before. When you remake a movie, you always lose something from the original. You always. And I am like strongly against this. Like,
it's not gonna happen. Realistically, it's not gonna happen. Project stalled or something.
I seriously hope it doesn't happen, because this movie is a classic, and one should not, like, I don't feel it should be remade, at least not now. Maybe later. Maybe not in American cinema. I just don't want it to be remade right now.
Please not in American cinema or any cinema.
Well, you know, it was made in Bollywood already.
Yeah, which was a
part of it, because they couldn't go the whole nine yards with
they just completely like. And they were refusing to believe that, they were refusing to accept that they actually took the story, even though there is like strong references.
But of course, dude. Anyways, let's forget the Bollywood part. I don't want the culture to devolve into something so petty now. Anyways, so, yeah, Old Boy and The Host.
These two are great films. Check them out.
And while you're at it, watch the whole Sympathy trilogy as well.
those are great movies as well. Anyway.
So, yeah.
So that's all I've been watching.
Okay, cool. Arfi?
I went to the cinema, I think, a couple of weeks ago, because my wife wanted to watch Nightmare on Elm Street remake. She's a horror movie fan, so we went in there and watched that. And it was a decent remake. I mean, the original movie was never a masterpiece. You know, the acting was a little bit campy and what have you. But you know, Robert Englund, he created this character, and I still believe he actually did a really good job. Now this movie, you know, when it comes, it followed the same storyline, where, you know, why is Freddy doing this? It's kind of like a horror mystery, you know, where these kids are trying to find out why Freddy is doing these things. Why is he killing these kids in their dreams? You know, what happened? And I think they actually changed the, for lack of a better word, the money shot, which is,
spoilers?
No, I'm not going to say, obviously, what Freddy's motivation was. And I mean, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, Mihir, because I mean, obviously I can't say it out here because it's spoilers.
You're wrong.
But, huh? What? Nothing. Wrong?
Yeah.
the motivation, I think, for Freddy in the original movies was much better than this. So.
What I've heard of the movie and what I've read about the movie, his motivation in this film is, I guess, more of a today's times.
Yeah, this is the thing, you know.
Isn't he like a pedophile or something in the movie?
We were trying to avoid
that, but okay, yeah, he's a pedophile.
But
dude, this was out in the. I think this was out in the. This was made public. I mean,
Now that we've spoiled this for everyone, the whole mystery is that.
Don't spoil the whole.
Whatever.
The kids were trying to figure out, like, oh no, did we rat out this guy, and were we wrong? Were we just kids messing around? And at the end, it was just like, oh no, we were right. That's why he wants to kill us. It's just like. Oh,
but then what was the motivation in the in the original film?
Because they more or less damned an innocent man, I think, in the original. If I remember
wrongly, accusing him or something.
And that's what like.
And in this one, it's like he actually did it, and he's like, "Yeah, that wasn't enough. I'm actually going to kill you guys as well."
Yeah,
okay,
exactly.
Nice.
And you know, it's very gory. It's very gory. There's some very cheap thrills. You know, it's just like, okay, let's. Huh?
Jump scares, I'm guessing they use.
Yeah, jump scares. You know, it's just like, it's dark here. All of a sudden, let's flash his face and make a loud noise.
Like Doom 3.
You know? Yeah. So, you know, that annoys me because it's just like, okay, well, that was not necessary, you know. I mean, there were a couple of nice bits where you were just like, oh, that was a nice sort of moment. But that was few and far between and... Yeah, overall, it was just another monster movie almost, whereas, you know, the Nightmare on Elm Street series became such a cult following. If this movie had come across now without the, you know, the original set of movies that had come out, I don't think this would have done anything. I mean, it already didn't do much in the cinemas, but no one would have said, oh man, what a character, or... Because it just didn't come out that way. You know, you weren't as wowed. I don't know. I mean, it would be interesting to get a perspective from a brand new, you know, viewer who's never watched A Nightmare on Elm Street before. But
The series had gone to...
Oh, yeah. I mean, with Freddy's revenge and everything, that was just like, oh, give me a friggin' break, you know? One and two were nice. The third one had some nice camp value to it, the Dream Warriors. And then four, five, and six were just like, okay, we're just trying to milk it for as much as we can. 5 became really, really gory, and it was nice gory, actually. It was really cringeworthy gory. So
like
I guess
Saw level of gory?
Yeah, well, you know, there's this one scene where Freddy makes, if I remember correctly, makes a marionette puppet out of one of the kids.
What?
And
oh.
the strings are actually his veins coming through.
What?
His,
oh.
Yeah, he rips his veins out from his arm.
I think in Naruto, I'm not sure though.
He rips veins out through his arms, and they're still connected to his hands, and he's more or less, you know, controlling him through that. So it's all just like, ah! Oh my god, that's nasty, you know. So
the ghost is back.
Yeah. Is it?
Yes.
Right.
No, I was saying, like, I can't remember. I think I've seen it in an anime or in a movie, but we've seen
Dude, in Naruto, he was, like, using, like, bones and shit, that guy.
I can't remember which one it was exactly, because I remember there being a... I don't know. Naruto just came...
The fuck have you been watching, man?
I can't remember. Anyways, I'll be back.
Yeah, so, you know, it's very... Very average movie.
Okay.
I mean, it's not something that I'm gonna. If you want to watch Nightmare, just get the original, watch that. I think that'll be much more worth your while. And I actually plan to do that. I wanna sort of get at least a couple of the old movies and watch them again, just to, you know, see what they're like.
Good stuff.
Yeah. As far as movies go, that's all. I've been watching an old series, older-ish series. Which is Battlestar Galactica.
Mm.
I'm on the second season right now, almost halfway through the second season, and this shit just keeps on getting better, man. I mean, every episode is a ride in that movie, whether it's part of the bigger picture of what's going on. There's always something in there that's, you know, keeping you glued to the television, the character development and the... you know, exchanges between characters and stuff like
that.
How many seasons?
Have you seen?
I just said I'm almost halfway through season two.
Two, okay. Clearly, I wasn't listening to you.
Yeah, obviously. so, you know, both my wife and I, in fact, are absolutely loving this because there's so much more than a science fiction series. It's a sci-fi drama, a space opera, whatever you want to call it. I mean,
there's a lot of social commentary going on in these, in the whole series. I mean, throughout the period, and it continued since 2003 was when the miniseries came out until 2009, end of 2000. No, end of 2009.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, you feel yourself at times feeling for characters that you think you really shouldn't be rooting for. It's just like, but, you know, they're not a nice character. Why do I want to? And it's just lovely, the development from this. I mean,
yeah,
I can't
like the complicated characters and everything. Have you reached the part where?
You can't ask me that.
No, I'm just asking. I'm just gonna say one thing. You tell me because if you haven't reached it, it will make absolutely no sense.
Uh-huh.
Jesus, guys.
No. Oh my god. Oh my god.
You're
I can't wait.
That part?
Because he's obviously, you know, he's got delusions of grandeur, man.
But dude, honestly, he's one of the most, he's the best character in that series. One of the best characters in that series.
Fantastic. He's the most complicated, complex, messed up.
Conflicted,
exactly.
I mean, at times he's so good, you're like, man, this guy is so good. He's a genius. He's a bastard. He did that.
Seriously, and then you feel at times you're like, oh, what a son of a, you know, and then you're like, oh, yeah, well done, guys. And you're like, no, hold on. Last episode, you was being a bastard, you know, so it's just like, it's fantastic. I'm absolutely loving that show. I'm so upset that there's only 4 seasons of it. But hey, all good things have to come to an end. And, you know,
I mean, be glad that it wasn't another Heroes or, you know.
Oh, yeah, or Lost or what. And I also, Temur, obviously, I have to mention this. What did you say, 30 seconds or 10 seconds I can have? That I finished Lost Season 6.
Okay, yeah.
So
you're 15 seconds, listen.
I watched...
I have some things to say on Battlestar.
Okay, go ahead.
He'll be happy. They're most happy.
So
yeah.
I watched the first two miniseries episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched about I think half of season one.
Okay.
And it was good, but I found it a bit too cheesy.
I understand where you're coming from.
And a lot of a very kind of like corny in some moments.
That alone turned you off?
Yeah, that kind of turned me on because like, I don't know, I can't, you know, when you're watching a movie, you have these production values, but when you go to TV, the production values are like drastically lower, and sometimes they don't look good. I don't know,
I know initially it was really bad.
Yeah,
really.
The first season was a bit touch and go.
It looks
yeah.
so campy.
I mean, yeah. I wanted to watch it, but I don't know, that always puts me off. So, I mean, that's why
it reminded you of the early 1994 Stargate series or something like that.
No, I haven't watched any of that, so I don't know, but.
I've seen glimpses of episodes while switching channels, so I know.
Yeah, I don't know, I'm not much of a sci-fi geek or anything, but I found it a very, very, very cheesy, to be honest. That's what really put me off. But I mean, it wasn't bad. It was well done.
The thing is that I watched it all the way till the bitter end, and the bitter end it was. Arfi, I'll ask you again once you're done with the series, how you sort of, because initially, man, until the first, second, because the thing is that the miniseries are really good. The first season goes good, and then second goes really good, and then it sort of drops down towards the third. Fourth is like completely up and down, up and down. Because there's a lot of points where, you know, the story is just, it feels that whatever they're saying is pointless.
Mm.
And the ending, obviously I'm not going to spoil anything and I'm not even going to tell you how I feel about it. Needless to say, I'm not happy. But, we'll talk about it once you're done with the series.
So yeah, that's what I've been watching mainly, that, and yeah, I've been enjoying it. Thanks, Temur. Anyway.
Cool.
What about you, dude?
Me?
Mm.
Oh, dude. Finally, my time has come. We got a phone call now. That was a ringtone from, I completely forgot. Higashi no Eden, yes. Noblesse oblige, indeed. Anyways, whatever. Arfi, you will have no idea what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
His ringtone is from an anime, very popular anime. And the ringtone he has is the one, the same guy that they use, or whatever. So I've been watching not that many movies, honestly. I caught a little bit of War of the Worlds, Steven Spielberg's 2005 film. I'm one of the few people who actually like that movie.
Fucking Borefest. Sorry.
Okay, yeah.
Which movie?
War of the Worlds, 2005. Steven Spielberg.
Oh, Tom Cruise. Okay, right. Go ahead.
I guess.
No, I'm not going to talk about it. I'm just going to say that I really enjoyed it. The only thing that pissed me off about that movie, was the.
It was Tom Cruise.
No, hell no, man.
No,
Tom Cruise.
I actually didn't mind Tom Cruise. I hated Dakota Fanning. I wish that bitch would die. I'm sorry. That she was one annoying character. Seriously, that movie pissed me off because it was so boring.
Okay, let's not get too deep into this. What pissed me off about the movie was the unnecessary bloom effects. Like, at that time, you know, video games were using this overly SDR, like, you know, bloom effects where there would be too much sunlight. Like, it just felt like, you know, everything is just has a glowing edge. I don't know why the hell he used it for that movie. I mean, come on, man. Anyways, whatever. Of course he did. Man, that movie was intense. Okay, whatever. Any other movies? I haven't been watching that many, like, you know, what's it called? Live action movies. I have been watching, well, I've just watched it once, Evangelion 2.22. This is the second part in the rebuild of Evangelion series. No?
Yeah, continue.
Okay, fine. Yeah, okay. Go ahead. Anyways, yeah. Evangelion 2.22, remake of the original TV series. The first, I was actually so excited about watching the second movie that I watched the first movie again because I caught that back in 2009. Summer 2009. Man, holy shit. Because the first movie is just a sort of a remake of the first original six episodes of the anime series. So not much, I mean, there wasn't much that was changed. A few scenes here and there, but for the most part, it was pretty much the same thing. Arfi, you've already seen the first six episodes, I'm guessing, of the anime?
I think he's watched the movies, right?
No. Arfi, you haven't watched the movies. You've watched the anime, right?
Right.
Why isn't he answering?
What?
Are you confused, Arfi?
Hello, I am answering.
Okay.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, we can hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
I was freaking talking away, man. Why couldn't you hear me? Yeah, I watched the first six episodes.
Okay, good. I think you need to check your mute button on that mic of yours.
Dude, no, man.
Okay. So, I mean, the first movie is pretty much the same thing, except that the characters, they look pretty much the same. I mean, obviously there's a lot of CGI, which they have sort of made it so that it looks animated, and obviously the animation has improved like 100-fold. But the character design is still the same. It still looks something out of 95. The best part about the second movie was, I mean, they're continuing the trend of, you know, obviously better animation and music. So, in the second movie, I mean, they're continuing the trend of excellent, superior animation. And they introduce a new character right off the bat. They start off with a new character. This new character, she is not that integral to the story yet, but in the third movie, she's supposed to get, you know, deeper. And the best part about the movie is everybody I hated in the TV series, I love them now. Like, the main character was universally, he was considered as the most wimpiest, whiniest bitch alive. He's a small kid who's 13, 14 years old.
Is this a continuation from the first movie? Or is it
Continuation from the first movie. I mean, they're covering the whole TV series, except that, you know, they're changing core plots
right now.
And what's it called? They've introduced a lot of new scenes, you know, a lot of new set pieces. Some of the fight sequences with some of the angels are completely different this time around. And obviously because they have to accommodate the changes now. But man, the best part is honestly the character change. The way the characters develop now, you can actually understand, you know, why they're feeling so messed up, and they don't whine as much as they do in the TV series, but it's still, just the way they present it is so natural. I mean, they're not throwing emotions at your face. Everybody isn't just fighting or whining or, you know, crying about things that they can't control and whatnot. They're just accepting, you know, fate as it is. And even when Shinji himself, he says that, you know, okay, I don't want to pilot these, the Evangelion units anymore. You understand, because people hate him for piloting these things. He's hurting other people. His friends are dying. So, I mean, it's only natural that, you know, this thing that you already found a bit irritating at first, you're just like, man, F this shit. And then everybody just, I mean, the way the whole thing evolves, how he, like, sort of, his journey, not just his journey, everybody else's journey as well. Like, the other characters, how his dad, like, became, you could see him, like, in the TV series, he's a very cold-hearted bastard. And, like, in the movies, you can see, like, you know, okay, you can appreciate where he's coming from and, you know, some of the tough decisions that he makes. You understand, you know, okay, why he did these things to, you know, to save humanity and whatnot. Of course, he still has some sinister plot going on in the background. But man, I just loved all the characters in this movie. Even like one of the most irritating person in the TV series, Asuka. She became so nice in this one. I mean, obviously they don't like do a complete 180 degree on the characters. They still behave the same way, but you have a better reasoning of why they behave these ways. So it came like as a great surprise when, you know, she has been in the anime series. She is like, you know, Evangelion is always those three people, Shinji, Rei, and Asuka. Like, these three people are like the highlight of the series, their relationships with each other. So it was sort of surprising when they killed her off halfway through the film. I'm thinking, what? That's a change. I was actually sad this time around when they killed her off, and I was like, man, just when I was going to like her. But anyways, I mean,
he killed her off.
If you like robots, if you like, it's not mecha anime. There's not mech suits or anything. I mean, these suits that they're piloting, the Evangelion units, they're flesh and blood actually. Like, when they break, there's like blood and shit coming out. You kill an angel, there's like tsunamis of blood coming out, man. There's so much destruction in the world. The seas, this is one of the scenes. The oceans are all red. Because there's so much blood has been spilled all over the world. They're actually going, like, one of the scenes is like they take all these kids to an aquarium where they're treating the water to go back into, you know, like the ocean is all blue and stuff. So like this aquarium is all blue and they're going in and they're like, this is how the world used to be. You know, there's sharks and dolphins and fishes and all that kind of shit. And they're like, yeah, I mean, this is how much it has advanced. So you like sci-fi movies, or, you know, you just like sci-fi, you like not robots, but you like, you know, giant epic sort of battles. You like good character development. You have to see these. Of course, it goes without saying that anybody who's seen the TV series, who liked it or hated it, you have to see the movie again. It is just absolutely amazing. And to anybody who hasn't seen the TV series, I would suggest completely ignore those things and just start with the TV and just start with the movie, the remakes.
All right, Temur, I'll take those off you then.
Hell yes. Category then.
I haven't watched any of Evangelion before.
Dude, I'm going to say now, after these movies, that it's a good decision you haven't watched any. I think I was the one who actually dissuaded you from watching those. But anyways, I've just watched the movies. The third movie is supposed to come out in 2011, like, you know, continuing the two-year trend. And then the fourth movie will be 2013 something.
Right.
So, and man, like the soundtrack of this movie and every aspect, you know, when you know how you watched Kick-Ass, you're like, oh shit, I gotta watch this movie again. Because everything at the movie was great. Or like Dark Knight, you're like, this is such a huge, you know, like such a brilliant ride that, you know, everything in that movie was beyond your expectations. Exactly with Evangelion. Mm-hmm. And of course for me, it's that much sweeter because I really hated the series towards the end. And now with this remake, man, oh.
So high praise for Evangelion, the films, not the anime series.
I'm one of the few haters of the anime series, but people will say that Evangelion is still one of the epitomes of anime.
Yeah, it has a,
like Akira.
8.8 or something.
Yeah. Like Akira, the anime series was like a complete game changer. I mean, people realize that, you know, anime isn't just for kids. It's not just, you know, like fan service, or it's not just stupid, like, you know, shonen young boys like going up in power and stuff. Emotional stuff happens in that anime. Psychological stuff as well, which I don't agree with, but that's a different thing. So yeah. Evangelion, watch it. Watch them all. Get them. And the Blu-ray releases are, yeah, except for the anime series. And the Blu-ray, man, the Blu-ray prints are so awesome, so beautifully converted. I can't even tell you how beautiful this thing looks. So yeah. That's all I've been watching. Apart from regular anime and stuff. Just a quick one. Since there's such a lack of, you know, animes in the spring season this year, I actually went back to an old anime series called Death Note.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
Arfi, have you seen it?
No, I've heard a lot about it though.
Okay, that's another extremely good series. I'll give it to you once in our next meetup. Anyway, so yeah, I'll talk about Death Note in the next podcast once I'm probably done with that series. I'm halfway through. Not half his room. Anyways, whatever. So that's all we've been watching now. Let's jump to what we've been playing. Mir, have you been playing anything?
Yeah.
Damn, what? Really?
I picked up Red Dead Redemption.
Oh, snap. Yes.
Yeah, and I played about 45 minutes into it, so I can't really say what's going on till now because the story is still not, like, set into motion. And I was just basically, like, just roaming around the world trying to see what makes this game so great, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So basically I can't really tell you what I'm like my opinion of it because I've only played 45 minutes and people say it's a 20-hour game, so I'll refrain from
saying you finished it in like what, 26-28 hours?
Yes.
Okay.
With 80% completion. Yeah.
You can continue here.
I'm just saying that's all I've been playing because I can't really say anything because my exams have been going on and I haven't been playing like anything. So
okay.
I guess give me a week and I'll try and finish it or I'll try and play a lot of it and I'll give my verdict next week.
Sure. Next week. Arfi, what have you been playing, sir?
Obviously, Red Dead Redemption. I finished it last week.
Mm-hmm.
And, we discussed this. I called you all in giggles after I finished the game, you know, gushing about how good how much fun the end was and everything.
Yeah, the ending, like, I haven't played the game and probably won't, maybe like sometime during the summer because there's a big drought coming out now. But man, the ending, wow. Just gotta say, for anybody, for all our listeners who finished the game, for those who haven't finished the game, you're like, you're in for a real treat.
I mean, you know, it's proper Western style, you know, the whole game gives you that feeling of that you're this sort of lone guy up against the world, you know, and it's just great. I mean, this is, you know, there have been many games. I mean, Grand Theft Auto had all these mini games and stuff as well, but this is the first game that has really made me play mini games and actually sort of lose myself in them. You know, I'm talking about playing like Texas Hold'em poker and stuff in within a game. I mean, I never knew how to freaking even play Texas Hold'em poker. And I actually sort of learned within that game. And I found myself just sitting at a table and playing for an hour straight in that game. because it just worked. You know, and not just that, you know, there's other games, there's blackjack, there's something called Liar's Dice. These are all sort of like, you know, mini board game kind of things. And I would just sit there and play and, you know, I'd want to win. And for no other reason than it was no, I didn't get any achievements for them. They were just really enjoyable.
You're playing a game for the game's sake.
What do you mean?
Good man.
Like, you know, you're just enjoying the game.
Yeah, it was exactly, you know, it all fit and it all worked really nicely. And just the development of the story, because it kind of throws you for a loop after about 2.5, 3, what you think would be 3/3 of the game, where you're coming to the end and then you realize, oh, okay, there's quite a bit more left here, and the developments that follow on from there, and what goes and how it ends is just absolutely fantastic. I mean, this game is definitely deserving of a 9 out of 10 just because of everything that's involved and how well everything works.
Game of the year? Material.
I don't know. I don't know.
It's a strong contender. I mean,
it'll be a contender for sure. Yeah. It'll be a contender for sure.
Don't look at what other people are saying. Like, this is your own opinion, because at the end of the year, the culture's, you know, game of the year stuff is different.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's definitely going to be a contender.
We haven't played the game yet. Anyway, sorry to cut you off. I'm asking, is my voice really low?
No, your voice is fine now.
It's fine now, yeah. I've been playing a bit of Blur and a Blur Split Second, a lot of Blur multiplayer actually, which Temur, I'll let you speak about that. And then I played and finished another game. Yeah, this has been an eventful 2 weeks for gaming, which Temur, you didn't really enjoy that much, and I think you left about 1/3 of the way through.
Yeah.
And that game is Alan Wake. So, I mean, I got my hands on it and I started playing it, and I understand where you were coming from, but that's kind of, I'll just tell you sort of what that game is all about. You're more or less this writer, and your wife, you lose your wife in this small town that you've gone to as a retreat. And, what it is, there's this some dark presence in this town that's, you know, taken your wife, maybe, or maybe hasn't taken your wife. You're not so sure what's happened.
Were you even married at what point? Or were you?
No, it's not that bad. and you've more or less lost a week of your life, and you're finding these manuscript pages for this story that you've apparently written and you don't remember writing, and more or less the story is coming through as you play through the game. So there's this whole mystery of where the hell did these story pages come from, what's happening in this town, what is the mystery of this town, and this is what unravels as you go along. I mean, Temur, actually, I wish you had continued to play, because there's one or two really nice set pieces that come through. I mean, as you go deeper into the game, you know, it does throw you for a loop in terms of story, but it works. You know, it's like a horror mystery movie, and that's...
Yeah,
sort of,
but really, you know...
Is my voice fine now? Because people keep saying...
Your voice is more than fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, you know, the story progresses and you get more of this, you know, understanding of what's going on and everything. And as I was saying, there's some set pieces. I mean, there's this one bit where, I mean, you know, if you play through the game, obviously it makes sense, but you more or less fight these dark beings on a rock concert stage at one point. So there are all these pyrotechnics going on because...
Oh, dude, they're Left 4 Dead much? As cool as Left 4 Dead 2.
Yeah, sure. But, no, I know. I mean, you know, that maybe there's some fan service because, you know, these dark presence creatures, they're affected by the light, you know, obviously. So, you know, when you have a rock concert stage with pyrotechnics and things. I mean, it's quite a lot of fun, and there's some other ones that can be quite bad. But one thing that was very evident was the animation and the graphics. Even though from a distance they look good, but when you had cut scenes where characters were talking to each other, they looked like marionettes out of Thunderbirds, you know, like with these cutout jaws and stuff going up and down, up and down. And that really broke the whole immersion within the game, which was this supposed to be this, you know, mystery drama thing, where's my wife and all that, and you have these little bloody Thunderbird marionettes coming and talking to each other. You're just like, what the F is going on here, you know? And that really spoils it all. I mean, when you finish the game, it's just like,
I've seen the ending.
Yeah, it was kind of like, okay, that kind of makes sense, what happened. But then there's the very, very end of the game where you're just
you
like,
finished
okay.
finished it already?
Yeah. It was nice. About maybe 8 hours or so.
Clearly,
8-9 hours.
Okay.
Which is not bad. And I mean, I would give this game, after everything, story, gameplay, the works, about a 7, which is not a bad score.
Which is what I reviewed it as well.
Yeah. But I would say pick it up in the bargain bin,
yes,
or if you can, rent it off or borrow it from a friend for a weekend when you have a lot of time to play. You will finish the game.
Regardless of our experiences, then the ultimate decision by both of us is the same, that pick it up from the bargain bin or rent it.
Yeah.
It's not worth $60.
Yeah, but I actually manned up and I finished the game, unlike you. You probably just got scared of it. But anyway, yeah.
Scared of the bullshit.
and today I've just literally I installed the new Prince of Persia game.
Is it called the Forgotten Sands? I think
Forgotten
that's
Sands
called.
Exactly. So I'll start playing that hopefully this week, and I'll be able to comment on it for next week's podcast. So that's what I've been playing. It's been good, actually. It's been a good gaming week. For single player games, not that great a week for multiplayer games.
Nice.
Well, I mean, okay. Yeah, I thought you guys played Blur.
We
did.
I'll talk about that a little.
But that was a weekend thing, and not so much during the week thing. Go on.
Okay, yeah. So my turn then. I'll just start off by saying that I started this adventure back in 2007, and then I just wanted to cry because it was so difficult. I'm talking about Half-Life 2 Episode 2. I played it on the 360, and pretty much I got near the end level where, you know, there's, for people who've played this, then they'll realize what I'm saying, is that there's striders. They're like these huge RF. You might have seen them if you've played Half-Life 2 ever. Have you?
Yes.
Okay. You know those three.
Yes, the tripod-y type
yes.
thing. Yes.
Are these spoilers? Because I've finished the game. I think that's a spoiler, right?
Dude, it came out in 2007, dude.
Yeah, but the
opening cutscene. So
okay.
So they were in Half-Life 2 as well, but in Half-Life 2 they just came towards that, you know, where the whole City 17 fight took place. Otherwise, they weren't that prevalent. Anyways, in Episode 2, there's like you. It's right near the end, and you're supposed to protect the rebel base, if you will, from these oncoming Strider attacks. Now these Striders are they're accompanied by, you know, small sort of mini two-legged hunters as well, who look sort of like the tripod, except that, you know, they shoot. The big ones are accompanied by two or three small ones. And how you're supposed to kill the big ones is that you're supposed to grab this small energy ball with your anti-gravity gun, stick it on the big ones, the big tripods, and then shoot them with your pistol or, you know, any gun that you have. You're supposed to do this while the small ones are attacking you. The dumbasses around you are trying to shoot, but they don't exactly, you know, aren't that effective, or, you know, half of them are dead. And then these Striders are also walking towards the base. So if they touch the base gate, then, you know, it's game over. Dude, on the 360, this shit was hard. I've played a lot of games on the 360, Modern Warfare, Modern Warfare 2, like, you know, proper fast aiming.
But are your skills, like, good enough?
For that, 360? No way. That's why I gave it up on that. Anyways, I reformatted my PC recently, so I thought, you know, let's just try it out for the heck of it. I wanted some Steam achievements. Not that it really matters. So I downloaded it, played it, finished it, Man, what a game.
This is episode 2 or episode 1?
This is episode 2. I finished the whole thing in like 2 sittings. On the same day, I finished it in just under 5 hours.
Hoping for an E3 announcement of episode 3, aren't you?
Hell yes, because...
aren't we like all of your... Aren't we Valve fanboys? I mean, we could all... I'm happy to say that, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because we played every Valve game in the last, 5 years? We've played every Valve game that has come out.
Every Valve. Dude, Valve and Blizzard are honestly the only two big companies that are keeping PC gaming alive in the sense of, you know, insane revenue turnover and still being in the mainstream media and appealing to the hardcore audience. I'm talking not about Farmville. But anyways, dude, what a game. From story to, like, the pacing, Half-Life 2 was, it was a long-ass game, man. It was like 20-plus hours. There were points where I got, you know, just sick. You know when you're playing like a single person, FPS game especially, you just start feeling sick because things aren't moving as fast or as quickly as you want them to. They're just sort of dragging you down and you're like, man, whatever.
Well, after 5 hours of gameplay, I think any game will be...
No, but that's the thing. At the 5th hour, it sort of, you know, ends. And, but man, just those 5 hours, it is so much fun. And I have to say that even now, the game looks amazing. The lighting system and, you know, it just looks, of course, it's nothing like Crysis or, you know, nothing like Gears of War. But, you know, it's not trying to be, when you play Source games, they feel very, you know, slim or in terms of the presentation. It's very precise, you know, clinical.
Easy. Yeah, they are very, like, I feel many Valve games look very similar. But these subtle, like, differences, like, just make them, like,
yeah,
I don't know.
Left 4 Dead 2 versus, let's say, Team Fortress 2. That's a huge difference.
Of course. But I'm saying, like, look at Day of Defeat and look at Half-Life and look at, like...
Counter-Strike.
Yeah, sure. They all look very, very similar. But I'm guessing that's because they are on the same engine, but...
But not only that, I mean, many of them, apart from Left 4 Dead series, they also share the same sound effects. So, like, you know, when you're reloading the gun or when you're getting a new cache of weapons or something like that, the sound effects, they share the same. But the point is that, you know, they feel good and they run extremely smooth.
Right, yeah.
And, man, that was one hell of a freaking game. Really, really loved it. It's going for, like, I think $9 or something on Steam. Maybe. Anyways, the whole of Orange Box is going for $30 on Steam, so get that. The second game, like I was saying, I've probably just played an hour, is Alpha Protocol on the PC.
Oh yes, you got that.
No, on the PC, not on the 360.
Okay.
I must say, man, that game looks like ass. I have everything up. That game looks like first generation Xbox titles.
Son of a bitch, what?
It is so unpolished. Some of the effects look really nice. Like, you know, when you go into Saudi Arabia.
Okay, well, you go to Saudi Arabia.
The game is like, that's one of the starting missions. But dude, you travel all over, around the world.
A spy, right?
So the whole game is that you're a spy, and then the basic gameplay is, it's by Obsidian. These guys are working on Fallout New Vegas. They also worked on the original one, first and second Fallout. What other game did Obsidian work on recently?
I know they worked on something. I can't remember.
Who was, what's that game called? Knights of the Old Republic was not them. That was BioWare.
I'll find it while you're...
The game looks like ass. Like, I've turned, like, anti-aliasing. It looks sharp, but, man, like, the textures are pretty bad. So I guess it'll look nice on the 360, is what I'm saying, or the PS3. So go for that. The shooting mechanics also work sort of like... it feels very console-ish. I mean, it's not as, you know, razor-precise. I guess part of the reason for that is that, like Fallout, there's sort of a, or Fallout 3 rather, there's sort of an underlying dice mechanic going on there. You know, even if you shoot guys in the head, they won't die.
Yeah, the shooting mechanics were very kind of, I would say clunky, but I don't know.
I mean, that was dependent on the VAT system as well, because you went into slow motion and then it was pure.
No, I'm just saying not without the VAT system, just the normal shooting.
Even then. Because you would like have like a high power. It all depended on the skills of your guns that you were using. So
not your own skill.
Yeah, not your skills in aiming. So that's one of the, but it's not as regular as Fallout. Like, in the beginning levels, I just had like a measly pistol and I was like trying to shoot guys in the head with tranquilizer guns, bullets. Worked fine for the most part. The best part about this game is the decision-making system. Now, think of it like Fallout 3 with Mass Effect. So the gameplay is like Fallout 3. Like, you know, you're running and shooting third person. I think you can switch to first person. I didn't try that out. But you know how you assign points, to your character is also sort of like Fallout. You have like these set number, or Mass Effect, I guess. You have like these set number of points you can assign them towards, you know, being a better stealth, or having better stealth, or, you know, having better, I guess motivational, skills so that, you know, you can intimidate people, or, you know, better in shotguns, better in assault rifles, stuff like that. So I guess more like Mass Effect than Fallout. And the decision-making system, this is where the game really, really shines. At any given moment when you're having conversation with people, and it's like Mass Effect, you know, like the screen switches and it's just you having a dialogue with somebody else. And then like these dialogue options, they appear at the bottom of the screen. Like you have three, for the most part, in the beginning at least, you have three dialogue options. There's a timer at the top. There's a bar. It just keeps on going down really fast. And you're supposed to make these decisions within that time limit. Otherwise, it'll just go for the basic thing that's highlighted by the game itself, which is sort of a neutral answer. It's not like Fallout where, it's not like Mass Effect where, you know, you have a good answer, you have a bad answer, then you have like a neutral answer.
But sometimes the good answers can also backfire on you, which is like what I loved about Fallout. I mean, Mass Effect.
Yeah. In this game, the decisions are really extremely tough and there's no good or bad answer. Everything is like in the gray area. So, like, let's say, you know, I'm talking to my handler, the guy who looks at me, who looks after me when, you know, I'm introduced to the whatever secret agency this is. And, you know, we're just having like a normal conversation. He's talking about my past history. And then you can make like a sarcastic, and it says the options are like this: professional answer, sarcastic answer, or, you know, you need to be a bit more aggressive. Regardless of whatever you choose, the answers are really creative, and I accidentally, like, the game crashed on me once on the PC. Surprise. I had to reload from the last checkpoint. There's no, like, you know, you can't just save any place you like. So I had to reload from the last checkpoint, and this time I took another answer. Completely different reaction. Okay. And just for the heck of it, I stopped and restarted again from the last checkpoint. I chose the third option. Again, completely different reaction from that guy, from my, like, whatever dialogues I had said as well. They were all going in the same direction. I mean, you know, the ultimate result was the same. You had to continue.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, one of the things was, like, you know, you had more sort of, in one of the options, like, you know, you got a bit more background history towards your character and then insight into what the other guy was saying as well. So it keeps on changing a lot. And I've heard that, you know, sometimes some decisions you have to make in split second. Like, there's not enough time and you just go by instinct. This is something that I really love. Because unlike Mass Effect 2 where, you know, you can just sit, relax and really mull over your decisions. Over here, you know, you're like on your toes all the time. So, and the decisions have a wide ranging effect. Like, you know, you can go ahead and kill some weapons dealer. I was listening this, or I think I was reading this from a forum board or something like that. You can go ahead and kill a weapons dealer, and then you won't have good weapons, but then none of your enemies will have good weapons either. So everybody's in sort of a shitty situation because that guy can't, you know, double deal with your enemies. You know, like this one part where you're interrogating some person, and then that person, like, sort of reaches into their jacket. And you have to, like, make this decision quickly, execute or, you know, stop that person or something. You press execute, the person, you kill that person, obviously, and then it turns out the person was just pulling out papers.
Okay.
So it has a huge effect on, you know, it really changes the world around you. And pretty much in real time as well.
Nice.
And another interesting thing was, you know, how you level up your weapons. You can go to, like, this online facility, like this black market, you can say. And then, you know, you're not obviously given, sometimes you're given some money because, you know, you're an agent. But for the most part, you're supposed to steal money by, you know, robbing other people. Or, you know, when you beat up bad guys, you know, you can get money from them. And then you can use that money to spend into, you know, getting better upgrades. You can get upgrades for gadgets, like, you know, and gadgets, like, I'm talking Splinter Cell level gadgets. You can, like, so yeah, as I was saying, like, you know, you have a lot of upgrade options. It's not very typical like Mass Effect where, you know, you have certain branches that you can go in and then, you know, keep on upgrading. Like, let's say ship upgrades or, you don't have, like, you know, those power weapons in Mass Effect. You remember the one that Arfi, that one that had the mini nuclear explosion where everybody died, including yourself.
Yes.
So there's a lot of stuff that you have to, like, you know, think about. It gets very into Fallout territory now.
Okay.
You know, you're being pretty precise in the terms of loadout that you can have at any one time.
Okay.
And the best part about the game, Nolan North, he's voicing the main guy.
Okay.
You must have heard Nolan North, Arfi, in what other game?
He doesn't
Uncharted.
Know.
Uncharted. Uncharted.
Okay.
Yeah. Army of 248. I can keep on going on, but anyways. And you know, he, you can feel his voice coming after you realize that it's Nolan North. Then you know you can just sort of link back to Uncharted, like nothing great, and he, like, whatever voice he's saying. But he is a bit of a sociopath in this one. I mean, in Uncharted, you know, he's like, you know, he's kind of a everyday guy, like a nice guy, you know, with some good sarcastic sense of humor. Or he's like, yeah, you know what would be funny if I burned that guy? Let's burn him. And then you burn him. Like,
okay.
Let me ask you this. It's got 65% on Metacritic with, like, I think over 30 reviews.
I mean, I will say this.
From your outside, it's you seem to be pretty praising of this game. Like,
The game is really unpolished. I already told you, like, you know,
I mean, I got the graphics.
Yeah, when you
graphics,
see the game,
but gameplay and all that.
The shooting is, you know, like I said, it's better suited on the console because graphically you can sort of forgive this game because, you know, it's on the 360, you don't expect much anyways, but on the PC it was completely forgetting that the gameplay, you know, like the shooting mechanics and all, it's also, you'll feel comfortable on the control pad rather than because you don't feel precise shooting on the PC.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I would say that if you want to play this game, definitely get it on the console. Secondly, yes, the game is it's unpolished in parts, and you know there are a lot of nice ideas that it's trying to present. Sometimes, in fact, like I told you, that you know decisions that you make will completely change the game. This can be a bit overwhelming at times. Like, you know, sometimes I'm like, man, what the fuck? I want to play this game again, but I don't know what option to choose now. I don't know what the hell I'll be getting into. Complete quest lines can be cut off if you, like, you know, obviously if you
choose the wrong decision, basically.
Yeah, not the wrong decision. There is,
I mean,
no,
but,
right,
but the decision you take at that point, and you want to play another quest
line, makes for an extremely immersive story. But you know, if you want to play it again, like Mass Effect 2, then you're sort of hesitant as to, you know, how you should proceed with things.
Right.
And oftentimes you might end up making the same decision because you don't have time to think, or you just be like, oh, fuck, what did I do? Did I kill that person again?
But I don't know, I find that to be like a good point because
yeah, that's
like Mass Effect, you could sit and like just think over it for like 30 minutes and the screen is the scene keeps changing between the two players and nothing happens. But
exactly.
I like the fact that it's like you have to, like, quick decisions have to be taken quickly and like, you know, slow decisions where you can think, that's fine, that should be like how Mass Effect is. But when it's like freaking your ship is under fire or something, you can't just sit there and like look at each other, you know.
Yeah. I mean, Destruction of Galaxy be damned, I'll have an ice cream now. And then think over for what I have to do next. But I mean, in this game, I won't compare it to Mass Effect or any of the RPGs, but it takes time to ramp up. And by takes time, like I said, I just played less than 2 hours now.
Mm-hmm.
I can see it building up, and from what I've read and again heard from other places as well, the game gets really, really, really good towards as it progresses near the end.
Mm-hmm.
And
how long have you played?
Less than 2 hours.
Okay.
So
okay.
I'm still, like, you know, I just went into the Saudi Arabia now, and I'm still, like, I skipped all the tutorial missions because, you know, it's sort of like Mass Effect, you know, you can sort of go into this menu where you can have
an
overlay.
You can figure it out, yeah. It's not as deep as Fallout, I wouldn't say that.
No.
Fallout, you needed those tutorials in Fallout.
The mechanics aren't as deep as Fallout. That doesn't mean that the gameplay itself isn't as deep because you have like these multiple layers of, you know, what gadgets do I need to use, whether I go for gadgets or, you know, better, health status or, you know, better, armor, protective gear or whatnot. So it is as strategic as Fallout 3, but at the same time, it's also as compelling as Mass Effect 2 in terms of, you know, the world around you, how it's changing. Better, in fact. It's a pity then that, you know, I mean, the game is so rough on the edges.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely, if you like Mass Effect, you'll love this game.
Okay.
It's not as good as Mass Effect 2. The core elements are really nice, but, you know, man, the presentation is so shitty. It's a And I don't know what the hell these guys were doing, because the game was supposed to be out in October last year.
Yeah, it kept getting delayed for some reason. And I thought they were polishing it, but they... I don't know what they
obviously.
Came up.
Obviously not. I think part of the reason can be blamed on New Vegas as well. I don't know whether they split up the team or something. I've absolutely no idea. That could have some sort of negative effect on the games as well. But yeah, I mean, it's the kind of game where, you know, you can just sit back, relax, and enjoy it. If you don't get it now, there's no hurries. You can get it in the bargain, you know, rent it out or something. But it's you should play it if you like RPGs.
Nice, okay. And, I'm excited about this again.
Yeah, definitely. I wasn't paying much attention, but man, after I played the initial section, completely hooked.
Nice.
Mm.
So yeah. And definitely one game that you would want to replay again because of the summer draft coming in.
Cool.
Apart from that, we've just been playing Blur, you know, Blur. God damn, that game is good. I played a little bit of the single player as well because I thought, you know, after getting your ass kicked for the nth time, you know, I thought maybe I'll unlock some cards in the single player. Holy fuck, single player is hard. Almost guilty. In some of the races, it is just impossible to, like, get some of the awards or, you know, get some all the requirements that you're supposed to get. I'm like,
even on easy difficulty, like, it's not easy.
I switched to easy difficulty, and as the game ramps up, like, you know, you have, like, I think, like, 12 or 14 bosses to defeat. I'm on the fourth boss now.
Oh, nice.
And some of the shit is hard because you have different requirements. It's not that you're supposed to come first in, you know, all the events. You're, like, supposed to unlock, like, this next box that I'm doing. You're supposed to have 5 reverse shunts, and then you are supposed to hit, like, 10 people with electricity, and then
you're
supposed...
Was that, like, a challenge?
During races, you're supposed to do these. So, like, you know, let's say I do one race, and then in that race, I, like, you know, have 10 people, you know, electrified with the bowl, because, you know, I don't necessarily get that power up. Then I'll play that race again. But of course, it keeps on, it remembers, it counts your previous stats.
Okay, so it's not like one race you have to do, otherwise that'll be like insanely hard.
No, you have 5 or 6 races, but dude, even then, because some of the races, like the second last race always is that you're supposed to achieve 80%, in terms of ranking. Like, you know, you're supposed to not only come first, but you're also supposed to, you know, have X number of fans or, you know, this thing.
It's very demanding, basically.
It is mad demanding.
Like, I haven't played the game, as in the, like, I haven't bought the retail game. Okay. But I've been watching videos online, and, I mean, we were saying before when we played the beta that this game, you know, even if you're coming last, you can still come back up and win the game. Yeah. In the single player, that does not happen. Like, I've been watching videos.
I would say even in the multiplayer, because if you do not have, it's a pretty realistic, it's not that much of a stretch to say that, you know, if you don't have some of the higher end cars, that you would consistently lose, or at least you don't even think about coming in the first place. Of course, it helps if you don't crash into walls or, you know, but sometimes, I mean, it depends, because like I told you, within the first or second corner, the game is decided. Then it's just between packs. So you'll either be racing between coming in seventh, or, you know, racing between coming in fourth out of, so you'll always be in bunches of cars. And you'll just be racing to, you know, get the upper hand. So the last three, whoever wants to come in on the seventh position instead of coming in tenth. But yeah, it is always intense unless you really, really crash like all the time. But yeah, the game is extremely good.
Very, very, very good. I mean, I was playing with another friend of ours over the weekend, and we were, after a while, we were both consistently coming in the top four. And very often we'd be battling it out between the two of us. And that's where this whole sort of friend, you know, when your friends are playing along with you, that's when it becomes even more intense, because it's like you're having this rivalry to get to like third place.
Yep.
And get more fans between like the two or three of you. And, you know, it's the whole last minute, last corner things, like, which can change everything. So
in terms of intensity, and, you know, decision making, I would say this is more split second than split second.
Okay.
Got it.
So, cause, you know, in split second, you sort of build up your powers, and then, you know, you unleash them at the time, whenever you see the icons. But over here, oh my God.
Yeah.
Shit will be coming at you from all over the places.
I mean, you can be in first place and then you see, like, everyone has decided to bloody throw shunts at you, which are these homing missiles, and you have no power-ups to counteract them, and you are so screwed. And you can go from first place to, like,
seventh easily.
Yeah, you know, it's insane and intense. But even when that happens, you know, you're in first place and then you got dropped down to halfway point or even down to the bottom, you know, it was a fun race. You would have enjoyed yourself. It would have been a good experience.
And not least because of the number of fans that you get and, you know, the next level that you unlock. The game also, like Halo, or it awards you medals at the end, or like Bad Company 2, I would say.
Exactly.
So, and then, you know, these medals are distributed between three or five people in a race of 10 or 20, let's say.
Yeah. It's never pointless. Yeah. You'll always get something out of it, and it'll always be fun. So, yep.
This is the racer to get, which is then sort of sad and confusing to see how few people are playing it online. I would have genuinely expected a much bigger community than this. Maybe because of Split Second.
Man, multiplayer Split Second, forget it.
Yeah,
dude.
But see, here's the thing, right? Many people already bought the racing game that they had to buy. So $60 are gone.
Mm. Yeah.
This game came in late, so they lose out.
Yeah. I mean, surprisingly, thing, right? both games got like 83%. So we were even more confused when
actually,
we used to get.
It's Blur got 83, Split Seconds got 82. So there you go, Blur wins.
Yeah.
I guess that's all what we've been playing this week. We'll have more new stuff, more updated stuff next week as well. Unless you guys have something you want to say.
Yeah, I got something to say. Yeah, no, I was thinking, like, we come here every week and we just talk about basically what we've been playing and what we've been watching, right? I told you this.
Yes, that thing. Okay, yeah. Go ahead.
So,
this is something. Yeah.
So, I came up with this idea that we should, like, have an aim for an episode. And, like, after we do our what we've been watching.
Oh, dude, like, this is so pointless, right? What we've been doing.
Kind of, but yeah, okay, I don't want to say that completely, but. Anyway, so what I thought of, we'll have an in-depth review at the end of each episode of something, say like a movie or an anime or a game, and we will all watch it that week, or we will all play it that week, or basically we will try and completely, like, say if it's like a chunk of anime episodes, we'll watch that chunk of anime episodes, and we will notify our viewers on our site of what we are going to be watching. Okay. So they also if they actually enjoy our show and they want to come to watch it or hear it, they will basically watch it also and basically we'll basically have like an in-depth review of it. We'll start with like a non-spoilery region and then we'll go into like in-depth spoilers, and we will of course give a cutoff mark. So like we'll have like a section of what we've been watching, which will be like smaller than what we've been like doing for these last couple of episodes.
Yeah, because again, because the topic of the week, so to speak, will be cutting into the time of the whole thing, because we don't want to drag the podcast way too long.
Right. And basically, so we'll be doing the what we'll be watching, what we've been playing, and then we'll go into an in-depth review of like a movie or an anime, a chunk of anime episodes or a game.
It could be anything. I mean, whatever we talk about usually, but it'll be just one thing that, you know, all of us can just participate in that discussion.
Yeah.
With full knowledge of everything that's going on.
Yeah. So I hopefully that turns out to be a great idea and it makes
any
it so
idea
more
what
interesting.
We're gonna do next week then?
I don't have anything in mind, but I guess we'll talk out and we'll.
Is there any? Yeah. Is there any?
We'll try and
get.
What we'll do is I have a feeling that we'll discuss.
No, listen.
It.
We can talk about one Blu-ray movie that's out due soon, which we all can get. So you know we can start with something easier, and then you know once it gets established the format, then you know we can jump into whatever.
That's what I'm saying. Like we try and do a review something that everybody has access to. It's not like very hard to find. And so sometimes we will do those obscure movies because we want people to watch them. Who might have never heard of it. But of course that will also be accessible with whatever means you get it. Anyway. Mm. So that's what I wanted to say. So for next week, I think that's, I don't know which part, episode number, I think 26 or 27.
This is 26. So
27. We will on Deculture, if you go on Deculture, I'll put up a post or one of us will put up a post on what we'll be like, watching this week, so you can come and have a we can come and talk about it in depth. So I guess check that out. Wait for that tomorrow, and that's all I wanted to say.
Alrighty then. I guess that's it. Let's just go over the housekeeping notes again. You can obviously catch us on the-culture.com. That's the main website where the podcast will be uploaded. You can even check us out on iTunes. Just search for The Culture. That's one word. What else? Twitter. Oh, yeah, Twitter.com.
Okay, after you finish, I'll say I guess a big achievement for us.
Okay, quick Twitter.com updates is twitter.com/MihirJ. That's MihirJ. Temur H, TaimWrH. Arfi Man.
Run? Yes, Arfi Man.
That's Arfiman. And D Culture 101. That's D Culture 101. All one word.
Yeah, I wanted to say that if you go and search D Culture right now on Google, we are number one. So,
yes! finally, remember when we started off, we were like on the fourth or fifth page or something, and then we slowly climbed up to the second pages. Oh, God, man.
Well done, boys. Well done.
Mm. Yeah, I know. When did we start off? Summer of 2008, right? So, yep. What, 2.5 years?
Yeah.
That's quite an achievement.
Yeah.
This is all thanks to our readers.
Yes, thank you.
And listeners.
Yes, and our listeners as well. We'll thank our listeners more once you're, charting on iTunes.
Listeners,
we love
them. So ungrateful.
We love them all. Equally. And, email us on theculture101@gmail.com. We'll answer your questions, or if you want to hate on us, that too. So that's it for this week from me, RV, Mir.
See you guys
next
week.
And
thank you.
And hopefully next week will be a more interesting episode, or one of the most interesting.
What are you
episodes.
Trying to say, man? Stop,
Jeez, man, this is our own podcast, man. What up?
I swear, man. What the F?
Dying fired. Burning. Okay, yeah, guys, thank you all, and see you all next week. Bye.
Later.